Okay. Sein Mesechtes Rosh Hashanah. Mishnah starts off by saying, Arba Rosh Hashanim Heim. There are four Rosh Hashanahs. Now we know basically one Rosh Hashanah and then the first day of Tishrei. The Mishnah says there's four Rosh Hashanahs. And the Gemara explains, what the Mishnah says, what does this mean? Ve'echad ben Nissan, on the first day of Nissan, is Rosh Hashanah Lamlachim, is the Yom, the Rosh Hashanah for kings, Ulam Rogalim, and for the Yomim Tevim. And basically, the Gemara is going to elaborate on each one of these. But simply, what it means is as follows. Rashi explains that out of respect to the kings, Rashi learns the Goyish kings, even, they used to date documents based on the rule of the king. Meaning, in the third year, a document was written in the third year of Napoleon, the fourth year of Napoleon, or in those days, whatever the king was, because they basically didn't count necessarily from the beginning of creation. Nowadays, when we write a ksuba or documents like that, we write in the year from creation, 5,762. In those days, they used to do it for the kings. Now, the Chachamim wanted to make a uniform system. So what they did was they established that the new year for kings is Rosh Chodesh Nissan. That means if a king became king, Rosh Chodesh Adar, a month earlier, and if they wrote a document in Adar, they would write the first year of the king's rule. As soon as Rosh Chodesh Nissan came, it started the new year. It became the second year of his rule. And the Gemara is going to explain why this is very important, because otherwise it could be very confusing in all the laws of documents. So in order to make a uniform thing, they made that Rosh Hashanah of kings is the first day of Nissan. That means no matter when he became king, when Rosh Chodesh Nissan comes, the din is it automatically becomes the new year.
The Jewish kings.
No, Rashi learned. In fact, Rashi learns the Goyish kings. Rashi learns the Goyish kings. And Rashi learns that it refers to Shalom Malchus, to have peace. Tosfos argues in Rashi, Tosfos says, Ve'ene king, and Tosfos learns it's speaking about Yiddish kings. Mm-hmm. But Rashi learns out of peace for the king, he used to write the dates of the Goyish kings. But whatever it was, it's the king, Goyish king, Jewish king. But the bottom line is, when Rosh Chodesh Nissan came, it became automatically the new year for the king. And for Yom Tevim, that we know, like the first Yom Tev is the first month is Nissan, so Pesach is called the first Yom Tev. Okay, Be'echad Be'elul, on the first day of Elul, is another Rosh Hashanah LeMaaser Behema, for Maaser Behema, for tithing animals. What does this mean? The Torah says you have to tithe your animals every year. And like we say in davening, Avchor v'Amaiser Pesach Kachim Kam, they have to bring the tenth of the animals. They have to bring it as a carbon to Hashem, and the Maaser would be eaten by the Kohanim. Now, what happened was that the Torah learned. We learn out the Gemara is going to learn this all from Psukim. You're not allowed to tithe from the animals of one year for the previous year. In other words, the animals that were born this year is what you have to tithe. You can't tithe from one year's animals on a previous year or a later year. Now, what's the cutoff point of the year? What is considered the new year? So the Gemara says, Rosh Chodesh Elul. Rabbi Lazar and Rabbi Shimon Amen, Rabbi Lazar and Rabbi Shimon argue on the first opinion, and they say, Be'echad B'Tishrei. And the first of Tishrei is the new year for animals. So the argument is, when is the new year for animals? What difference does it make about tithing the animals? Be'echad B'Tishrei, on the first day of Tishrei, which we call Rosh Hashanah, is Rosh Hashanah L'Shanim. That's when the new year begins, meaning 5,762 began on Rosh Hashanah. Next Rosh Hashanah is going to begin 5,763. And also the Shemitah, we know the sabbatical year, when you're not allowed to plant things in Eretz Yisrael. When is the year? So the year is from Rosh Hashanah to Rosh Hashanah. And also the Yevlis, for the Yevil, okay, the Jubilee year. When is the Jubilee year from Tishrei to Tishrei? And also the Netiyah for planting, as far as Arla goes, and the Yerokas for vegetables. Now, first we'll do the vegetables ones, are simple. Vegetables is also, you have to tithe your vegetables. Mm-hmm. You can't tithe from one year's vegetables and another year's vegetables. Okay, so what's the din? When is the new year for vegetables? Echad b'tishrei. What's the din of Arla, which is called Natiya, that Rashi says means Arla? Arla is you're not allowed to eat the new fruits from a tree for the first 3 years. Okay? What is the new year? So the din is, if I plant it Nisan, let's say, it's not 3 years from Nisan to Nisan. It's not 36 months. Whenever Tishrei comes, starts the second year. That means if I plant, let's say, a month before Rosh Hashanah, when I plant a tree a month before Rosh Hashanah, as soon as Rosh Hashanah comes, 1 year is counted. So the 3 years, in that case, would be 2 years and a month. That's the means, the new year for planting. Be'echad b'shvat, on the first day of Shvat, Rosh Hashanah le'ilan, k'divrei b'shamei. B'shamei says, the tree... When's the new year for trees? So we know Tu B'Shvat, but that's Beis Hillel's opinion. B'Shamei says, Rosh Chodesh Shvat is the new year for trees. What is the din of new year for trees? Again, as far as tithing the fruits of the tree from 1 year to the next, when is the new year for trees? The new year for trees is the first of Shvat. Beis Hillel Eimim B'Chamisha Asabe on the 15th of Shvat. So you have all these various concepts of Rosh Hashanah, but the Mishnah is explaining that, especially basically the concept of the tithing, for animals and for fruits and for vegetables, you have to know what is considered the new year to be able to know when I could tithe from what and what. Okay? And also for years and Shemitah and all that, we have Echad B'Tishrei. Then there's a fifth Rosh Hashanah, which is Yutas Kislev, which is Rosh Hashanah for Chassidus. The Rebbe Rashab came out with the concept that the previous Rebbe's father, he came out with the concept that Yitzchak Kislev is Rosh Hashanah for Chassidus. So a few of the non-Chassidic group came to Reb Chaim Brisker. I think it was Reb Chaim Brisker, and they said to him, "Hey, look. The Mishnah says there's four Rosh Hashanahs, and the Hasidim are making a fifth." Like he was laughing at it. So the Reb Chaim Brisker, Reb Chaim Meizer answered, "By uns feltem, by zei kum tzu. By us is lacking, and by them they're adding." Meaning, he said, "Look, by us we're taking away things from Yiddishkeit, and they're adding things." So he forgot. He accepted it. They accepted it. And Reb Chaim Brisker, Reb Chaim Meizer accepted the concept that Yitzchak Kislev is Rosh Hashanah for. Okay. So this is basically the Mishnah. So now the Gemara is going to explain what does the Mishnah mean. So the Gemara says, Mamacha for kings, Lamai Hilchasa. What difference does it mean that Rosh Hashanah for kings? What does it mean? So the Gemara says, Amar of Chista Lishtaris. It has to do with documents. And I'm going to first explain this outside because it's a very basic thing but needs explanation. If I take a loan from you, I mean, you have this in civil law also, but not in a different way a little bit than halacha. If you lend me $1,000, and we write a document that I owe you $1,000, it's very important that the date of the document is intact. Why? Because according to halacha, if you have I owe you $1,000. I write a document that I owe you $1,000. There's an automatic lien in halacha, right, with the document, that everything that I own is now bound to you. Anything I own at the present, okay, is bound to you. Anything I will buy is bound to you. Now let's say, for argument's sake, on the first day of Adar, you lend me $1,000. And I write that I owe you $1,000 and there's witnesses and everything is fine and legal and fine and dandy. And the loan, let's say, is for half a year. A month later, I sell you my property. The din is, you who have my document from the first of Adar can go to him and take away the field. You can go to the buyer and take away the field because there's a lien on the field from the date of the document. Very simple.
The person is not allowed to sell the field because he owes.
I could sell it.
He's allowed to.
Yeah. And you, the buyer, have a responsibility
to find out
if there's a lien on the field or not. Now the Gemara says in Baba Basra, in Ksubis, I mean all the Gemaras that discuss this, when there's a document that's signed by witnesses, it becomes a known fact. It becomes public knowledge. So therefore, if you buy a field from me, you have an obligation and the ability, and therefore the obligation, so to speak, to check out if there is a lien on the field. If it's an oral loan without any witnesses, so because not everybody knows about it, there's no witnesses that talk, and this guy talks and talks, and everybody ends up talking. And also there was a commotion, the scribe came, and the witnesses came, and the whole tumult. So then you have to find out about it. If it's an oral loan, you lend me $1,000. So then the din is, you cannot go to the buyers to collect the field. Because how is the buyer supposed to know there's a lien on the field? So the Chachamim did a favor, so to speak, to the buyer, that he cannot be collected. Now, most of the time, if the field is taken away from you, you can come back to me to get your money back or another field. Most of the time. If you buy it, for no lack of a better word, with insurance. It's called achrayis. Achrayis means when I sell you a field, you make me put in the document that if, for whatever reason it is, there's a lien on the field and the lender is going to come and take away the field from you, you can come back to me and get the field. Now, just one more small detail, obviously. The only time the lender can go to the buyer to take away the field if they first come to me and I have no money. If I have money or fields that are still mine, you can't go to the buyer. The only time you can go to the buyer is if there's I have no money, no property, no possessions, no nothing, then if Bezin can ascertain that I have no property, then you can go to the buyer to collect the field. Okay? That's the din. Why is the date so important? Why is the date of the document so important? It's a very simple reason. Let's say, one more detail, which is self-understood, but just to explain it. If I lend you lend me money on Adar, and a month before I sold you a field, before the loan, so obviously the lender cannot go to you to collect the field. There's no lien on the field, because they sold it to you a month before the loan. Right? And it's self-understood. The lien on the field is only from the time of the loan. But if I do it to you, English dates maybe to make it easier. If on September 1st you lent me the $1,000, but in August I sold you a field, so you can't go to him and collect the field. There's no lien on the field. I mean, that's self-understood. Well, one second. Now, why is the date so important? What happens if we predate the document? Let's say the loan took place really September 1st. But we're going to predate it 2 months earlier to July. Yeah? So the document says you lent me money July 1st when you really didn't lend me money until September 1st. Right? Now what happens if August 1st I sold you a field? The loan really didn't happen yet because the loan really took place September. But I predated the document to July. Okay. So on August 1st, when I sold you a field, there is really halachically no lien on the field because the loan didn't happen yet. Right? The loan didn't. The lien is when the loan takes place. But now the problem is, 5 years later, 2 years later, a month later, you're going to come to Bezdin. Bezdin's going to look at a document. The document says the loan took place July 1st. Right? They're going to go to the buyer and take away the field. Against halacha. So the Chachamim said, a predated document is not kosher, according to most opinions, to collect from the buyers. According to other poskim, it's not kosher at all. If you can prove it's predated, it's not a kosher document at all. But according to all opinions, you cannot collect from the buyer, because how can you collect from the buyer? Any buyer. Because we don't know when the sale took place or when the thing took place. It's a balagan. So you can't do it.
There is witnesses.
Yeah. Now, a post-dated document is good. Post-dated is good. Why? Let's say the loan took place, to change the dates, the loan took place July. The loan took place July 1st. But I'm writing the document's date September 1st. The lender is hurting himself. Because that means any fields sold between July and September, the lender can't collect because the document says September 1st the loan took place. So the lender is hurting himself. The Chum say, tough luck. You want to hurt yourself? Fine. This is, that's good. No problem. So therefore, the buyers are protected. The lender messes himself up. That's fine. Let him mess himself up. What did you want to ask?
Number one, let's say he sells more than one field. You say he sells his three fields, all of them being worth $1,000. He sells. Who do you go to collect that money from?
If the date of the loan was September 1st, and the fields were sold in October, November, any one of the fields that he likes, he can go to. Because there's an equal lien on all three fields. Now, sometimes, it's not so simple. Because sometimes the first buyer can say, listen, when I bought the field, I saved you properties to collect from. So there's a discussion of that in the Gemara, if you can go to any of them, or you have to go to the last buyer. But that we'll see, we'll get later on, not that the Gemara goes into this too much, it's not the Gemara Rosh Hashanah. The Gemara is just discussing why Rosh Hashanah for kings is Rosh Chodesh Nissan, not why it's Rosh Chodesh Nissan, but what's the purpose of it? The purpose of the document, of date of the document, and to know when the new Rosh Hashanah is that we want to have a uniform concept. And then the Gemara really goes even into a greater problem. Because sometimes it could be a whole mix-up when the loan took place. Like, for instance, if you write Tammuz, and you don't know when the king became king, is it before or after? Is it predated? Is it postdated? It becomes a whole balagan. Who knows when the king became king? So you have to remember that. You have to remember, it could be a whole mix-up, postdated, predated, and especially Rashi adds, there's a din, you can write the shtar for the loiva without the malva there. There's another din as follows. If I'm the borrower and you're the lender, okay, you can't go to Beis Din as a lender and say, write me a document, Beis Din, that I'm lending somebody $1,000. Beis Din's not going to write such a document. I mean, every guy's going to lie and say, I'm lending him $1,000, write me a document. Then I'm going to go collect $1,000 from him. But if the borrower comes to Beis Din, the borrower, and says, I want you to write a document that I borrowed from Reuven $1,000. Beis Din will do it, why not? You want to mess yourself up? Fine, you're entitled to it. You can't write for the lender. You can't write a document for the lender that the lender is lending $1,000 to Reuven if you don't know if he lent him or not. How can Beis Din write such a document? But if the borrower comes to Beis Din and says, Beis Din, I want you to write me a document that Reuven lent me $1,000. Besdin's going to write it, why not? You can obligate yourself money that you don't own, that you don't owe. You can obligate something that you don't have to. So therefore, Besdin would write it. And now the question is, the document was written, we don't know when the loan took place, we don't know when the king became king, it's going to be such a balagan that the Chachamim came up with a brainstorm. Rosh Chodesh Nisan is automatically the new year for kings. That's it. And like we said before, for whatever reason it is, they used to write in the documents the year of the king's ruling, of the king's reign. So therefore, the Chachamim said, that when Nisan comes, it automatically begins the new year. It's the second year already of the king. Whether he became king in Adar a month before, whether he became king 9 months before, it doesn't matter. When Rosh Chodesh Nisan comes, it's automatically the new year of the king.
Is that still, does it apply now?
Today we don't do it, because today we write from the beginning of creation. And that already is automatically from, like we learned the other Rosh Hashanah, it's from Tishrei. So when we write in a document 5762, you know automatically that it's from Rosh Hashanah of Echad B'Tishrei. Today we don't do any more from the kings.
Would we do it with the time of Mashiach?
There's no kings.
King Mashiach, is it king?
No, probably. I imagine not. Can't say, I don't think so. It'd
still be the Tishrei.
Yeah. Yeah.
Was the calendar set all the way until the year 6000?
The system of the calendar could be set in, for eternity, because it's a 19-year cycle that just keeps going and going and going and going. So it doesn't stop at 6000. The calendar is set up in a 19-year cycle that goes on for eternity. The system can keep going. Okay, let's see the Gemara inside now. Let's start from the beginning of the Gemara, midway through the page. Gemara says, "Lemlachem lemay hilchasa." What difference does it make that the Rosh Hashanah of kings is Rosh Chodesh Nisan? Amar Rav Chista, Rav Chista says the din is it applies to shtaris, to documents. What does it mean it applies to documents? The Tanan, because we learned in the Mishnah, shtari chayv amugdamim predated. Shtar chayv, an IOU that's predated, is psulin as possible. And like we explained, the reason very simple. Because from the time of the loan, there's a lien on all the properties. Right? And even the properties that the buyers buy after the date of the document. If you predate a document a month or two earlier, before the loan, and in that month or two, somebody brought property, halachically there's no lien on the property. But because the predated document says the loan took place 2 months earlier, Bezdin's going to allow you to go to the buyers, which is wrong. Let me explain at great length before. V'amucharim, and the post-dated documents, Shadim are kosher. By the way, this is an interesting din by a ksuba. It's a very interesting din. When you write ksubas, the date you signed the ksuba, that the witness has signed the ksuba, has to be the same date in the ksuba.
Same hour too?
No, in Yerushalayim, the Gemara says, they used to write hours.
Yeah.
Yeah. Outside Yerushalayim, they didn't write hours in the documents. Because what happens if the loan took place at 12 o'clock and the field was sold at 1? So Yerushalayim, they were very careful about it. So if the loan took place at 12 and the field was sold at 1, so there's a lien on the field. But the way we have our documents, it says the day. So then Bezdin has to question what lien is first, what took place first, the loan or the sale. But the only Yerushalayim, the Gemara says, that they wrote the hours and when the loan took place. But the Mashal, if somebody's getting married today, somebody's getting married during the today is what? Today's Tezvav Tevis. So if the wedding, if you're signing the ksuba today, Tezvav, and you write it today, Tezvav, there's no problem. But if you're writing in the ksuba, Tezvav, and you don't, and let's say night is 6 o'clock, yeah? And you sign the ksuba after 6 tonight, it's a predated ksuba, it's not kosher. Mm-hmm. That means if you have a fancy ksuba with a holy artwork on it, and they wrote the 15th of Tevis, and just until everybody woke up to come to the wedding, you signed the document after 6 o'clock tonight, it's an invalid ksuba. It's possible. You have to rewrite a ksuba. And the husband can't live with his wife because there's no ksuba. It's mamish a possible ksuba. If you write the ksuba today, and you sign it today, even if the wedding's tonight, it's fine. Because the ksuba is not the wedding, ksuba is the document itself. The document is written and signed on the same date that it says in the ksuba, so that's kosher. In fact, our Chabad custom is that even if the wedding's at night, we dafka write the ksuba during the day. Not that you have to, but that's called the minig. But if you write it at night, you have to put tomorrow's date. If you write it today, you have to put today's date. And that's this din over here, because a ksuba is really a debt. The obligations of a husband to the wife. And like it says in the ksuba, there's a bond on every property that I own or that I will own for the value of this ksuba. So it's like a shtar chayiv, that if it's a predated ksuba, it's not kosher. So yeah, when there's the problems a lot of times, by the way. Because you can't even sign a ksuba between sundown and nightfall. Because that's a doubt day or doubtful night. So what date are you going to write in the document? You can't write the date because maybe it's going to be predated or whatever it is. It's not going to be kosher.
But you can postdate it.
Yeah, but l'chatchila, the Gemara says, the Mishnah says it's kosher, but you don't l'chatchila do postdated that.
Why would you need an exact date to anyone?
Huh?
Just
the same reason on a loan document. If I lend you $1,000 today, right? As soon as I lend you the money, there's an automatic lien on every property that I own or that I will own. Even a property that I sell to a buyer, you have a lien on. And you can go to the buyer if I have no other money and take away the field. Okay? Now, if the loan is taking place today and I predate it to a month ago, so when Beis Din looks at the document, they're going to have a lien in their mind from a month ago. And that's not true, because the document doesn't make the lien. The loan makes the lien. Right? So Beis Din is going to come and collect from buyers against halacha. So that's why it's not kosher. Now, ksuba is the same thing. If, God forbid, there's a divorce or a death, right? And the husband has to pay the ksuba. And the estate has no money. Either the father dies, so the estate has no money, or the guy divorced his wife and he has no money. The Beis Din is going to go to the buyers who bought any property, right, from the husband. So you have to know when Beis Din could collect from the buyers and from when not. So you have to know, a ksuba is a monetary document. There's nothing to do with the marital issues besides money. A ksuba is a financial responsibility of a husband to a wife. And that's why the date of it is very important. And the Gemara says the same thing you should know is about a get. But a get is a different problem. What's the problem with a get? Over there could be life and death. If a man divorces his... I'm going to use English dates because I think it's easier to get it. If a man divorces his wife September 1st, right? And then she has an affair October 1st. She's not a married woman. Correct? Okay. What happens if the date says September 1st and the woman committed adultery a month earlier? So then she gets killed. Right? Now, what happens, the Gemara says, in the olden times, uncles used to marry nieces. Okay? So even though they divorced each other and they hate each other, but they're still relatives, so they like each other. And the woman, let's say, committed an affair, and the husband, al pi din, she might have to get killed, and the husband's going to say, no, the get is different date, and it's a later date, a predated, post-dated. You know what I mean? If you predate the get, if they actually got divorced September 1st, and you predate the get 2 months earlier, and she committed adultery in those 2 months, she's supposed to get killed, and now she's going to be off the hook. Or vice versa. So that's another problem by your get. It's mamish, not only a financial problem, it could be a question of life and death. When the woman committed adultery, was she married or wasn't she married? And how is Beis Din supposed to know if they don't see a document? But like we said, and this is a very important concept, even though really the Gemara, we're just talking about this, is only two lines, because now the Gemara is going to go into completely different things. Anytime there's a written document with witnesses, there is a tumul. It's called a kerel. It becomes public knowledge. And therefore, any buyer that buys something is supposed to, has a responsibility to make sure that the field is free and clear. Otherwise, he has to do what's called achrayis, which is a type of insurance that he makes up with the seller, that in case the field is taken away from me because of a lien that you put onto the field, you go back to the seller and he has to give you the money back or another field of equal value. And that's... Okay. So the Gemara says, Tan Rabbanan, six lines in the bottom of the page. Rabbanan learns, based on the din of the Mishnah, very simple. Melech Sha'amad Be'esim B'tisha Be'adar. A king became king the 29th of Adar. That means a day before the Shchedesh Nissen. Kivin She'egia Echa B'Nissen. Once the Shchedesh Nissen comes, means the next day, also Leishana. It's already starting the second year. V'im Lei Amad Ala Be'echad V'Nissen. But if he became king on the first day of Nissen, a day later, it doesn't count for him a year. For a whole year until the next Nissan comes around. It's very simple. Mar says, if you became a king the day before the Shchedesh Nissan, as soon as Nissan comes, you start your second year. If you became king the Shchedesh Nissan, when does your new year start? Literally a whole year later. Amar, so we just got through saying the Gemara says, Melech Sha'amad Be'esim V'tisha V'Adar. A king that became king on the 29th of Adar. Kivin Shigeh Echad V'Nissan. Once the first day of Nissan comes. Also Leishana, it's the new year. Hakamashmal, what does it teach us? Two things. Number one, the Nissan Rosh Hashanah Limlachin. It teaches us, number one, like we learned in our Mishnah, that Rosh Hashanah is the new year for kings. Begins the new year. V'yayim Echad Bashana. And another thing is, that even one day of the year, Chashiv Shana is considered a year. Okay? Okay, the Mefarshim say over here that in certain other dunim, you need at least a month before to count the new year. But this is rabbinic, this whole concept, so even a day makes it can start a new year already. But by biblical dinim, like by the tithing that we learned, the other dinim of the Mishnah, the new year can only begin if it's a month before the new year. But by this, because it's rabbinic, you can start a new year even a day later. And therefore, the Gemara says, "V'im le'amed ala ba'echad b'nissen," and if the king became king on the first day of Nissan, that we just learned, "Eimenem le'shanah chegiyah Nissan achen." It's not counted for a year until the whole cycle goes through, until the next Nissan. So Gemara says, Pshita, of course, I mean, it's understood, no, that he needs to wait a year. It says, Eitzricho de'im no'la mi'adr. That they voted for him in Adr. And as he didn't actually become king yet, but they elected him in Adr. So I would think that you can count him for the second year already in Nissan because they voted for him. Kamashima on the din is no. When he becomes king is when it becomes, when it starts.
The crowning?
Yeah, when they actually, the coronation of the king. But otherwise, even though if he became king, Rosh Chodesh Nissan means they voted him before, that's not counted. When he actually becomes king, in fact, even look at, in the Megillas Esther, you know, all the dates of Megillas Esther correspond with Achashverosh's ruling. At the beginning of the Megillah, it says in the third year of his reign. At the end of Megillah, it says in the 12th year of his reign. The Megillah itself is counting the years of that historical event based on the reign of Achashverosh.
That's what this whole discussion is, to date documents.
Yeah, that's what the Gemara says. We date documents based on the kings. Rashi learns the Goyish kings, Taisus learns the Yiddish kings, but whatever it is, you count the days from then. You have a, you know, I'll give you another example. You have an, another din, God forbid, if somebody's wife passes away, he's not allowed to remarry. There's exceptions to the law, but the law is he's not allowed to remarry until three chagim go by. Okay? That means... Yeah, but not necessarily. If somebody's wife dies out of Pesach, so he has Pesach, Shavuos, and Sukkot, he can get married a half a year later, technically. But if she dies right after Tishrei, then he has to wait for Pesach, Shavuos, and Sukkot, he has to wait a whole year. So the same thing over here. If the guy became king out of the Chodesh Nisan, Nisan is already the new year. If he became a Chodesh Nisan, he has to wait a whole year. And that's why, just one last thing, you have an interesting scenario, not exactly this case, but a kid who's born later can become bar mitzvah before a kid who was born earlier. For instance, if there's a two kids were born in a leap year. One was born the 20th of the first Adar. The second one was born the 10th of the second Adar. So the kid's 20 days older than the second kid. Reuven was born the 20th of the first Adar. Shimon was born the 10th of the second Adar. So he's 20 days older. The year they become bar mitzvah, there's only one Adar. So the kid that was born the 10th of Adar Sheni is going to become bar mitzvah 10 days before the kid who was born 20 days before him. But that's the way it goes. There's nothing you can do about it. Okay.